Black Women Are Scary, the podcast that celebrates people of color writing horror. Our Flash Fiction Friday guest is writer Nicole Shawan Jr., founder of Sea Salt and Honey, Roots, Wounds, Words, and the deputy director of prison and justice writing at Pen America. So let's lean in and listen to some scary black women.
Like, we know it now. Time is not a thing. It's not a thing that can be trusted. Period.
It's not a thing that can be trusted.
No, you can't. You can't. The other day I was like, what day of the week is it? Like, who? No, that's not how this works. You know, that's not how this works, even though they try to convince us that it is.
I mean, back in the day, well, we're just going by the seasons. It was the sun and like how many moons, right? Maybe.
That's exactly what it was.
Also, is that like a better measurement of time? Like, yeah. X amount of seasons or X amount of moons?
That's it. And that was like, you know, yes, time. And also, what's happening with the planets? You know, what is happening around us? So it's not necessarily this time for like production, time for labor, but time in terms of like, where are we within the larger context of the universe? Does that make sense? Like, now we associate time with what can I get done? What did I get done? What do I have to get done? What am I late for? That wasn't how that's what I mean by like, time is bullshit, you know? But I'm with you. Yeah, let's take a look at the stars. Let's take and see what's happening out there. I want to know what's happening in space. How do we fit into it?
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe that would be better. Then we would have a very different sense of like, what takes a long time? And what happened quickly, like our ideas of quick and our ideas of like a longness or you know, all of that would just change, I think. Maybe this past couple of years have felt extremely slow and they've also been really fast somehow.
Yeah. I wonder if we had this different understanding, if we had this ancient understanding of like change, right? If that would also like lead us to recognize our immortality. And so we wouldn't take all of like this bullshit so seriously, right? Because we have immortal energy.
Oh my gosh. That's like the perfect segue into this episode, right? Like, because the metamorphosis of Marie Martin is all, I feel like I didn't even think about how like it is about immortality, right? Like she doesn't, her kid even tells her, you're not coming back, but you're not gonna die. And she doesn't die. Right?
Yeah, you're right. She transcends. She transforms. Ashe.
Yeah. And it's like a sacrifice, right? Like she has to... She does that and she helps the ocean and she ultimately helps her family and all of her people and the land. So going back to what you were saying about like the universe and how do we fit in, but like she couldn't do it as a woman, as a human being, which I think is interesting. Like the immortality, it's an interesting look at immortality because it's not like a vampire or something like that, right? Where like I get to be this supernatural being forever and ever and ever, and I get to say the same, and it's all kind of tragic because I'm watching the people I love die and all that stuff. It's like, no, you get to live on, just not as you were, and your function and everything that you were doing before has now just shifted, but you also don't even get to remember. Like she can kind of rush that last part. She was like, I'm coming here to say it. It felt like she was saying goodbye. She was like, this is the last time I'm gonna remember that this was my daughter before I'm just like fish. like full-on fish.
I didn't get a sense. I think this concept of immortality is one that I didn't think of when reading this, and I certainly, now that you've said it, I want to ponder it. I mean, I wish I knew more about this world, about the fish, right? But I think this idea of transcendence 100% is a thread throughout this piece. This piece I thought was really powerful and beautiful. You know, I'm thinking about how her transformation came through the water as portal. Water is right in African spiritual cosmologies. Right. And then like thinking about, yes, like you said sacrifice, but I didn't look at it as sacrifice. I did not look at it as sacrifice. I looked at it and there's something to that. And I want to think about that a little bit more deeply. But when reading this and listening to it, excuse me, I thought about this as not sacrifice, but an elevation from a low vibration.
Oh, like a graduation of sorts.
100%. 100. Like, I didn't look at this as being, you know, something that when you think about sacrifice, you think like it feels like a burden. Oh, like I had to sacrifice that, right? It feels like a load that you have to carry. And for me, it was like, you've been blessed. You have been blessed to escape this vibration of, because what she was doing while she was human was sacrificing. She was sacrificing her spiritual integrity in order to make a buck for capitalism. Capitalism had her like, oh, I gotta get the fish, even though I know the fish are almost extinct because of what I'm doing and folks like me are doing, right? I can't change out of the way I've been living life because I can't see a different way. I don't hold enough faith to do something different. And so when she had that opportunity for her to transform into a fish in order to help her child, her family, her community, to me, it was like, you've got some powerful egun, you know, you've got powerful deities around you that have freed you up from that low vibrational human experience and brought you back to the water so that you can be reborn into what we know through our spiritual cosmologies as being a higher vibration.
So it was like she was chosen.
That's how I felt about it. And I noticed
not so much your sacrifice.
Yeah, 100%. 100%, because like she wasn't doing that shit by herself. Her sister was also a part of it.
Yeah.
Stay on the earth and keep the kid. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, there was a lot of people who were a part of this lifestyle of, you know, harvesting in the, you know, in gross ways from the water, you know, but she was chosen to do something different.
That's, I love that.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I love that her daughter knew.
Yeah.
You know, like just the way kids will know things sometimes.
Kids be knowing, you right.
They she be just honest. Knew. And she told her this truth. Yeah. And I do love that. I did get that sense of transformation. Like, this has to happen in the water. Of course, she wasn't like stabbed or shot, or she didn't fall off a cliff or get hit by a car. She drowned, right? Like the role that plays, as you were saying, like both like water as a conduit, but then also water in the middle passage and people who, you know, were like, I don't want to live a life in bondage. I'm going to do this. Like just that, this idea of that just being a portal for the African diaspora period for lots of different reasons. And so to begin with, like, I'm drowning, I'm dying, this is happening. Like to start there. And it's like, okay. And then the way, you know, the story moves through time. So in speaking with the author, she said like, she was very intentional about that it kind of goes back and forth like this because it's supposed to be like the way a fish moves.
Yep. I love that.
So it's like back to the whole like time is bullshit. You were saying like even the author was like, even the way we experience time is bullshit, I'm going to try to have you experience time maybe the way a fish would, which is like in and out, up and down, you know, like this. That's what she was trying to do by going back and forth like that. That's why it's not linear.
You know why? You know what I felt from that? I'm so glad she said that. First of all, how ill is that? To be like, I'm going to physicalize a story in the movement of a fish. What? That's number one. Crazy. Dope. Another thing though, is when I was listening to this, it felt like, so I wasn't thinking the movement of a fish. I was thinking the movement of waves. You know, the tide coming in
and
going back out. And then pulling you back in and then pushing you out. So like I was with her I'm gonna make sure pronouns she, her.
Yeah.
All right, dope. I was with her. I felt what she was trying to do, what she sought to do, she did. 100% yeah. She did. Whoa.
This in and out, this in and this, at least this understanding that it's this fluidity. And so this can't be chronological. It can't be like, I died and then this and then that. Like, we need to go like forward, back, forward, back, forward, yeah. back, mimicking something. If it's not the movement of the fish, then it's the movement of the water, but it's aquatic.
It's aquatic. It definitely is aquatic. She was successful. She was successful. Yeah.
I love that her brother was there. And she recognized him and he kind of recognized her, but his memory is already fading or faded of his time as a human being. And then it made me wonder about all the other fish. Like, is that where we go? Is that what happens?
Yeah.
You know?
I do. I love that. When the brother came in, I thought that was a really beautiful surprise.
Yeah.
It was like that, a moment where you were like, oof, okay, that's love. I feel love there. I'm so happy to have been pulled into a moment of more love. It reminds me very much of, you know, speaking of water and African cosmologies, like, you know, Yemaya Olokun, you know, like Yemaya being like this deity of the ocean and Olokun being another deity of the ocean, but really of like the deep waters, like the deep under of the sea. And so when I'm thinking about the brother and how he has been there for so long and his memory is really foggy and almost gone of this place, he remembered enough to remember her. And
yeah.
Her, which was beautiful. But that reminds me of this dichotomy between Yemaya and Olokun, right? Where he's like much more in, you know, along the bottom, the floor of the ocean where man has never been before. And here she is kind of up here as a guardian up there for the fish and the people. Whereas he's the guardian of the treasure, particularly the treasure that we lost in the Middle Passage. So all our people, our ancestors.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that felt really symbolic to me, that there was kind of like this masculine, feminine, Olokun, Yemaya happening in the water, and that you needed both to have the balance, right?
Right.
You needed them both for that balance. And I did like the idea of, you know, you mentioned this earlier, Wimoto, and I was like, that's spot on. This idea of the loss of memory, I like that because to me, it kind of signified a moving on.
Right? Yeah.
Moving on, you know, we are upwards and onwards. We have more things to do. Like the things that hold us back from achieving greatness are the attachments that we cling to, including our children. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but it's bittersweet for me. It's bittersweet for me because that child was still a child. You know, I mean, she was left with people who cared about her, but like, in order for her mother, for Marie, in order for the metamorphosis to be complete,
yeah,
like you're saying, like it involves a forgetting that needs to happen, you know, and once that happened. It's like her mother is gone, but she is not, but in a way she is. Like if you're looking at it from the, you know, perspective of the daughter, like let's just say she knows that her mom's a fish. It's like, but that's it though. Like that she was my mother. And I do, even though she lives on and I'm connected, it is both beautiful and kind of sad at the same time. Like it's those two things at once. I like that kind of moment, you know, I'm into that, but I also want to acknowledge that like metamorphosis is hard and it's uncomfortable and it's a bit sad. You know, you get to let go of things that maybe you really love.
Ashe.
Like, you have to. I get it. I get that she can't be a woman and be a fish.
Yeah.
I get that. And
she
so,
can't be a mother and be a healer.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like it works that way. Like the logic of it.
Yeah, I wasn't mad at it, actually. I've 100% felt this author being like, we need to make sure that you are unencumbered so that you can do the work of healing yourself and this community. I was with that 100%. And it tapped into, it wasn't just, you know, one person who was undergoing a metamorphosis. That child, like, listen, Marie Martin definitely was evolving. But that child also was undergoing a metamorphosis and could not continue to be attached to this low vibrational energy and creature, human, for her own metamorphosis to happen. Like, you could tell from the beginning, this child was powerful, more powerful than anyone else in the story, quite frankly.
Because she knew it was going to happen. And she didn't seem to be scared. And, like, her grandma was the one who was crying, and her sister was, but, like, she goes to the water with a very different energy. At least that's the interpretation I was left with. Like, she's, like, giving thanks or maybe looking for her. Like, I don't know. I don't know how she knew. And then on the same tip, but like, her sister.
Let me finish this, though. You know, thank you for chiming on. I just want to finish this really quickly. Oftentimes, parents are the reasons why children are held behind where they can be and where they need to be spiritually. Oftentimes, it is parents' fear for what may happen if their children are so great so soon that keeps them, you know, from really supporting their children. And so for me, it was like, no, this child has got to also be unencumbered by that low vibrational Marie, right? This child has got to be unencumbered by that in order to securely achieve her own greatness, the child's own greatness. So yes, I think you're 100% right. And I'm with you in terms of all change, positive change, change that's gonna bring us into our higher selves is incredibly hard, right? But the way that we get through it, the way that we can get through it is on faith, right? And knowing that this change is, no matter how it feels right now, no matter how shitty I feel right now, how fucked up the situation is, this change is necessary for me to elevate to a higher version of myself. And for everyone who I love, for them to elevate to the higher versions of themselves. And that's what I pull from it. Like, okay, a child is without a human mother, but the child has other human mothers, and a child clearly has spiritual mothers. You know, so I didn't feel bad like, oh, this child is going to be fucked up and left behind at all. I felt like this child is about to outpace everybody because she doesn't have the shackle of a low vibrational, fearful mom.
I never really thought about that aspect of it, that, and how true that is, that sometimes, you know, I mean, even if it comes from a place of love/fear, that children are held back by their parents.
And that's
how often it happens. No, I mean, it's not even like, you know, sometimes it's intentional because some people are malicious, but sometimes it's just like you're not letting go. You need to let go now. They are not an extension of you. They're not here to do what you didn't do. Like all of that projecting that I think some folks can't, you know, and all that competing with even other parents where it's like, now this is a competition. It's like, it's not about y'all two. It's about them. Thinking about her knowing this thing and also being able to move forward. And I wasn't worried about her. I'm also thinking about the transformation of her sister. Cause before she does it, she was like, you be her mother, you know, but will you? And you know, her sister's like, I don't want to hear all that. She's like, but if something happens to me, you be her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what that was like for her sister, because she was there when this happened.
I love how her sister immediately was like, come on, stop. Like, and that kind of, you know, obviously they're sisters, but they're, even if they weren't blood sisters, that type of kinship between Black women, I feel like is a real thing, you know, like, come on, man, you know, I got you. You know, no matter what. And so to see that, especially from the sister who was like mad laissez-faire and like, you know, my life like it's golden, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, she was a little that, just, you know, rolling the blunt before they free dive in the night. I was like, is this really, maybe this is the perfect time to smoke a blunt. Maybe, or like, I don't know, maybe this is why you drown. But like, Yeah, the thinking about how your transformation then has a domino effect, whatever it is, like, you know, that it is, might be painful for everyone, but it also then, my dad always says, like, you take a position, you force everybody else to take a position, like it can shake everyone out of their apathy, out of their, if they're stagnant too.
Yes.
This kind of makes me think a little bit of that. Did you see Everything Everywhere All at Once?
Oh, I did.
I felt like that was for me, that was what I took from that film, is like the same theme of like transformation here, and that her like untapped potential was like leaking all over everyone else around her. And when she transformed, everyone else could. So in a way, it was almost like she was holding everybody hostage. And I never really thought about that as like, I never really thought about that, you know, that like you being stuck someplace can also make every people near you and dear to you stuck in a place. And so you're you know, embracing your transformation, embracing elevation, like is not just good for you, it's good for everybody around you. Like thinking of it
Everybody.
as like a communal gesture, not just like a me, me thing.
Yo, first of all, thank you for pulling in that movie. Thank you for the analogy because I think that's so fucking spot on. And yes,
Right?
yes. Like if you shine, everyone in your world, everyone who you touch, can't help but to feel like, oh, I want to shine. I want to be me. I want to be my most authentic self. Oh, I love joy on X, Y, and Z. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I want to step into my own powerful joy. Yeah, I love how you just broke that down. Thank you for that.
Right. Like, because I remember thinking in some of the timelines, you know, like there was the one where she didn't go with him and she became famous. And she told him, like, I didn't leave with you, and it was so beautiful. And he got like sad for a minute and then he had to go be another person real fast. There was so much switching going on in that film. But I also remember in that same timeline where she got to be famous, he also was like great. Like when she saw him again at the award ceremony, he was all in his like sexy suit and everything. And I was like, oh, he leveled up too in that particular world where you guys didn't
Yeah.
do laundry and taxes together. Like it's not just like, oh, you were great and he like fell into a rock or something like that, you know? And so it's kind of the same idea with Marie. It's not like she transform had this magical transformation and everybody else was just kind of like the like kind of, you know, magical and incredible things happened to them as well. They moved forward. Their whole beach changed.
Yep.
Like they weren't even going to the water like that before. And now they can like go and enjoy themselves and play. Like the dynamic of their nation changed because the coral reef was repaired.
That's right. That's right. I
But
also love that we bring in this real conversation about how we're destroying the earth and our environment and how we need to take care of it. And it's not until we take care of the environment that we can take care of ourselves. Like the two, we're connected. We are
Right.
one. You know, so if we're treating our environment in a way where we are just like grossly, exploiting it, then we're doing that because that's what we're also doing to ourselves. We are grossly exploiting.
Right.
So we need to find this balance. We need to be able to take care of our environment and take care of ourselves, right? We can't have one without the other. The two are really contingent on the other half. Does that make sense? Like I'm
Yeah, it's like an extension of yourself, right? You
it's
know, or
totally
like
an extension of
we are an
yourself.
extension of the planet and the planet is an extension of us. So if
That's it.
this field is fallow, you are fallow as well. Like it's not like, you know, if it's barren, then the imagination is barren. Like it's just
Because
what it is.
we're spiritually barren. We're
Right.
spiritually barren, and I have to give another chin check to how capitalism plays such a part in the exploitation of the ocean in this story, in the same way that capitalism plays such a huge part in the exploitation of our environment in general, and like why we as spiritual beings are depleted and exploited because we're
Right.
working towards the system that was never set up for us to succeed or set up to like honor nature and the environment in the ways that we have as a people and peoples ancestrally.
There is a return to to an ancestral knowledge that's in this without her ever really naming it.
Exactly.
It's there though. It's like you get it. And in all these stories that are from this particular anthology, which is about, you know, having speculative fiction authors see a green future to write about climate disaster crisis and then like the space beyond that. So this was the winner of those 12 stories, or it's in the definitely at the top of the list of the 12. All the 12 are beautiful and they all have that. That is the point of the anthology, is that they were given this call, this writer, these writers to build out the solution essentially. It's just like, okay, this is gonna happen. And then what does it look like 50 to 100 years past that? I think I also believe that one of the caveats that they were given is that it has to have a hopeful ending. So
Yeah.
you have all these stories and we're, you know, producing a number of them for this second half of our third season, because it's all about land and place. And I just thought that these were such great, just beautiful pieces that are both really scary and also, I like that there's like a hopeful ending, but there's work in it. Like it's not like we just get the happy ending. Like she had to become a fish, y'all. Like, and she had to repair the core. It was not easy. And there's, you know, like I said, there's a bittersweetness. And I see that in all the stories and in the ones that are upcoming, that are coming up, you know, where it's like, yeah, people have to do these things. They have to step out of their comfort zones. They have to like transcend, ascend, change. It's going to affect their people around them. They might lose relationships. Like there's stakes for this. And I feel like that really helps us understand just how dire it is that we do this, because if not, it's just like, I don't know what the future is then.
I mean, I take like a different approach to it, man. And I know this might not be like the popular opinion and shit, but like, you listen, first of all, the name of the collection is something along the lines of like, you know,
Future
imagine,
ancestors.
right? Climate fiction for future ancestors. So once you have that climate fiction for future ancestors, we know that this we've got to respect and honor and bring in the ancestors, future and past, right? Or present, rather, our present ancestors, as well as our future ancestors. So yes, ancestral practices are important. We have to return to them in the very way that we return to the water. You know, we've got to return
Right.
to our water, which is our ancestral practices. But more than that, I don't look at the future of this planet from a place of fear. Because, and it ties back into how we set this conversation off, you know. We are immortal, like time is timeless, you know? Does that mean the future, like a blip in the map of the universe future, like, you know, however, like whatever that finite period of time is, won't be challenging? It fucking will. Yes,
I mean, it is. It's very challenging.
it is, but no, we not even. You know, like, yes, I hear what you're saying, but we're as challenging as it could be, right?
No.
Like we are at the edge. We're
Right.
getting into it, but yes, it will be challenging. But I'd rather not step into my responsibility as a spirit to this earth, to this planet, to other spirits from a position of fear about, oh, if we don't do this, then that'll be dire. No. It is for our own spiritual good that we begin to treat the earth and we begin to treat each other according to like these ways and these laws. And I'm not talking about the laws of man, I'm talking about spiritual laws, right? And if we don't do that, you know, well, yeah, it's gonna be real fucking challenging and we're gonna have to start all over again, you know? Like that's just what it is. That's what it is. But do I think there's gonna come a period where, like, okay, the earth is gone? That means that every spirit is gone too? No. That means we're gonna have to do this shit again and learn from our fucking mistakes, hopefully. And if we don't, guess what? We're gonna have to do this shit again. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Like,
I see what you
that
mean. It's
is
just like
the
a
loop
constant process.
that we're on. That's the loop that we're on. And we can have it a really beautiful fly fucking way. You know what I'm saying? Where the earth is abundant and we're not exploiting it. Or we can continue to exploit this motherfucker and have to like live hardships and just continue to do that again and again and again until we get the shit right. I believe that we will get, I trust spirit. I trust God. I know we will get the shit right at some point, but when that point is, I don't know. We'll see.
Right. I mean, I love that this collection exists and that you have minds that see it already. Like for me, just even sitting with the stories, it's like,
I shall.
what a beautiful, you know, future to paint, to be involved in painting. Like just like to bring them to life, to add sound to them. It's like, yeah, this is the kind of like future work that I want to be doing. Like, what about this? You know? And it's funny because the podcast is called Black Women Are Scary, and people would be like, maybe these aren't horror stories, but I'm like, there's some scary stuff. I think transforming into a fish is probably a little bit of scary. You know, like we had a conversation about, she was talking about butterflies and the chrysalis. She was thinking about that. She said that she had seen a cocoon. And she's like, I never see that. I only ever see caterpillars or butterflies. I never see that moment of transition in between, right? I'm like, yeah, like what is that even like? You know, just the we can be so like results oriented, of course, because of capitalism, because of the way we structured our society, it always wants to think about like where things end up. But I do wonder about that time in between when you're a caterpillar and you're starting a cocoon, like, what does this feel like? Is it comfortable? Are you scared? That time inside, are they always good dreams? Do you have nightmares? Like, before you finally emerge and have wings, like, there's this whole thing that happens there. And I feel as though that's where these stories live, and that's also kind of where we are, and that's where this podcast lives, and that, like, what about this thing though, before you finally cross the threshold? And how is that both wonderful and magical and scary?
I love that, and that brings me back to, Marie going when she's after she's a fish, going back to the beach. That's her in between time. It's like, I know that I'm not going to remember you soon. I know I'm not going to remember any of my past life in just a minute. So let me just like watch it. And what I appreciated about that moment is I did not get a sense of fear for Marie. I got a sense of, let me cherish the moment. Let me cherish the memories as I have them. But there was like also like a, okay, I will be ready for the unknown when that time comes. And I think I love that about your podcast is that you present that, right? Like, let's be ready for a lot of unknowns just by visiting memory right now, right? And I wonder about this whole scary, first of all, like, it is scary to become a fish after your kid done warned your ass. Your kid is like, stop fucking up, stop fucking up, stop fucking up. So, first of all, I thought she was gonna get locked up. I'm so glad this wasn't a story about carcerality because I was like, where are we going with this? And then when
Oh, you thought she was gonna get arrested or something for the fish? For the
what?
fish was illegal, yeah.
She was like, like, I'm not gonna be arrested, don't worry about it. And I was like, they're gonna be arrested. I'm so glad that that didn't happen to her. But I don't even know where the fuck I was going with that. But yes, I love what you were saying about like that in-between moment. She gave, for me, she gave, that was an inspiring moment where she gave me a sense of peace, at peaceness. Like, I'm falling. I see I'm falling, or rather, my memory's failing. I see my memory's failing, and I'm just gonna watch it. Right?
Yeah, I had to have let it go. Like, this is it.
That's
What
it.
happens? But we did all these things. So
That's it.
I want to tell you that. I want to tell you all this stuff. She talks about, like, I want to tell them this. I want to tell them that. But, I can't.
I can't. But I could watch them, though. I could watch them until I don't remember why I need to watch them anymore. Uplifting twist. Yes.
But it's not, well, I'm all about, like, we're gonna, when you have authors from all the communities that we have produced so far, they're gonna change what defines scary, because it's different depending on your cultural perspective what is scary, which I think is like the fun part. Like, I'm like, it's like this, that's what's great, is that, it can be this expansive. It doesn't just have to be like a killer cutting through things, or through people in a cabin in the woods, or the devil. Like, that's like the tip of the iceberg of what's scary.
And that's not black women scary because black women know I'm not going to put myself in certain situations to for that kind of horror to happen. The horror that really happens, or you know what I mean? Like we, like black women are like, I'm going to go camping and I'm going to make sure I'm okay. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm going to make sure I'm not doing the dumbest shit that anyone would fucking
I'm
do.
not going to look for the Blair Witch. That's
Exactly.
crazy.
That's not happening. You know what I'm saying? Like we're not going to do that. So what horror is for us is exactly what you put on this platform, right? It is those everyday kind of, the everyday microaggressions, the everyday warfare on our environment, so forth and
On
so
our
on that,
bodies.
on our body, on our bodies, on our bodies. That's horror for us. So I'm with you.
Yeah, I mean, we do also have some where it's just like monsters, but because you need to have that too, and it's fun to see, like, So, the Red Woman kick. But so what do we think about possible sequels? I feel like a really good sequel for this would be to hear, how did this happen to Boise? I'm really curious, like, what was his transformation to becoming a fish? And like, what was it like for him that whole time? How did he hold on to some memory? Because it seems like he's been dead for a minute, at least a couple of years, and he holds on to it for quite some time, because he then recognizes Marie. So I'm just like wondering, like, what is, like, what was his event, his transformation, what was that like? And then, like, when he sees Marie and is like, aha, like, what was that like? I think that would be a really good, like, part two.
I think that would be a dope sequel. I would want to read that, and I would want to listen to it. You know what else I would want to listen to and read? A freaking prequel. Why is this happening in this family? Why has this family been tapped for this, for these kinds of experiences? Like, what is it about? And with the kid, with the
daughter
being like as like clairvoyant, as tapped in spiritually as she is, I want to know. Like, bring us back in the day. Take us back to that ancestor who this all set off with. Like, who was the mermaid? Who's the mermaid in the family? Who was the fish in the family? I need to know. Bring that person in. Do you feel me?
Yeah, and what role does the grandmother play in that? Yes. Does she know?
All of that. That's what I want to know.
Okay. So that's like the series. Like, that's like the HBO Max series of, like, you know, it starts back here, and then we just, like, follow the family all the way till we get to the Metamorphosis Marie Martin, and then past it. Like, I'm also curious about what happens to this child.
Yes. What's this author's name? Nadine? Nadine Tomlinson?
Nadine Tomlinson.
Nadine, we need you to write the sequel and the prequel.
we need a book series, Nadine. So she's working on some other stuff. So I hope, you know, she listens to this and adds this to her list of things that she's writing. Did you get to do a little drabble inspired by any of these things?
I did not. Okay. Sorry. It's been
it's a lot. But I'm going to read mine because it actually plays into this idea of, like, the prequel and the sequel. So here's my little 100 words. I remember knowing in my gut that I'd never see my mom again. I remember how this knowing felt. Clear, strong, absolute. She fell over when I told her, but I wasn't scared or sad because I knew she wasn't going to die. I wasn't sad until later because everyone else was crying. Because they thought what happened to Boise happened to her. But I knew it's not that simple. And whenever we go to the beach and I get into the water, I know they're clear because of her. How do you explain that? Who would believe me? I thought I had found that in Cece, my best friend. But when I told her that I knew there were things other than death and they were forever, but beautiful, she told everyone that I was a witch.
Oof, I knew there were things other than forever, other than death, and that they were beautiful. Damn. What a line. That was incredible.
Thank you. Yeah. Just inspired by Nadine.
Yeah, Nadine, you inspired some shit. Listen, that was beautiful, Mimoto. Please finish that if the heart compels you, but I would love to hear it.
Just this idea, like, okay, let's say you know this and everyone else, you're at this funeral, but you know this funeral is bullshit. Mm-hmm. Right? Well, how do you explain this? How do you hold that? And then when you finally tell that, what will people say? So going back to, like, sometimes people bring you down. I just was like, I bet she told somebody, they would just be like, you're a witch. Like, I bet that'd be the first reaction. Like, not everybody's ready to accept that we're powerful.
Mm-hmm. Because people have had their own power stomped on, so it makes sense that they're not ready to accept somebody else's power. And also, I'll say this to you, so that, first of all, that was really insightful. Thank you for bringing that into the conversation with this piece. The other thing that was really interesting about what you wrote was like this idea of, I wasn't sad about it at all. And so the funeral happened and I saw other people crying. And again, just like how susceptible our energy is, our like powerful star-filled energy is to the energy of other folks, you know, no matter what frame of life and landscape they're coming from. And how we have to, especially folks who are really tapped in spiritually. And I think we all are. So this is, I'm not like speaking like there's a hierarchy of who's tapped in and who's not. But some people are more aware of what's happening. People are not, but they're more powerful than other people are. So the folks who are more aware of what's going on with ourselves, like there really has to be, we really have to be more determined about protecting our energy so that we're not feeling this sad. We weren't. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't until I came around you. You know, that kind of thing. And that speaks to, I think, the story again, like this child couldn't be her highest self with Marie as Marie's lowest self. Marie had to transcend in order for the child to be free to transcend as well. Yeah, that was
one. That's beautiful. And it's also like, I don't know, not painful, but like poignant of that connection between a mother and a child, or from parent to child, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That it's...
Yeah, it's true. I'm not trying to invalidate that at all. You know, I also recognize that, like, in terms of ancestral practices, it really did. Like, people were like, oh, it takes a village. But no, literally.
Really, it takes more than one person.
It was a village. It was all of the moms who were your mother. There was no distinguishing or differentiating between blood mother and, you know, other mother. Like, they were all mother. And so I think if we kind of, you know, return to that, like sister is stepping into mother, grandmother has been mother. If we return to that, we know this child hasn't lost anything. She hasn't lost anything. She's gained so much. It just looks
also different. Just how toxic it is, you know, like to have parents to tell them like they must sacrifice everything for the betterment, like that they should forego taking care of themselves and not really wanting to acknowledge that like them taking care of themselves is essential to them being able to take care of their child, you know? So this and kind of competitive
care of themselves. If I see my parents taking care of themselves, and that empowers me to take care of myself in all the ways.
Right. Again, just kind of coming back to like this kind of this capitalism that exists inside parenting, right? Where you need to compete, where it's all about like, how much can you grind? How much can you sacrifice? How much can you get for your kid? And it's not always about anything. People forget about all the other stuff, or they don't know how to talk about it. I don't know.
Yeah, you're right.
So I want to hear a little bit about you. Like, please tell everyone like what you're working on, where they can find your work.
Sure. My name is Nicole Shawan Jr. I am a counter storyteller. storyteller, yes. And I am working on two manuscript projects. I have a bunch of essays in the world that are on my website. Feel free if you want to like kick it with me, get to know a little bit more about me, and send me your stories. I love reading, right? Feel free to hit me up on Instagram at Nicole Shawan Jr. Hit me up on Twitter at Nicole Shawan, or you can check out my website. You can send me a message through there at NicoleShawanJr.com. But that's what's up. I'm working on two book length projects. I have the beginnings of an essay that's marinating. I'm guest editing for the Massachusetts Review. They have their 50th anniversary of their woman issue coming up. That was an issue that featured the likes of Sonia Sanchez, Angela Davis, and so I'm going to be guest editing for their 50th anniversary. And I'm really excited about this issue that I'm working on, and the folks that are going to contribute to it, and the conversation, how we'll be in conversation with the ancestors, right? Some of those ancestors. Around what it is to be a woman, who it is to be woman, and all of those things. You know, I have a organization that brings Black writers, or writers rather, of the African diaspora back to Africa for residency. That's
Tell us a little bit about that, because I just saw you just started that. Like, this inaugural year, right?
I did. This is the inaugural year, and it came from me listening to Ancestral Whisperings, just like this child did in this story. You know, Ancestral Whisperings to go to Dakar. I'd never been to Dakar before. I'd never been to Senegal before. I've been to the motherland before, but never to West Africa. And you know, just out of nowhere, I was getting all these downloads. You gotta go, you gotta go, you gotta go. So I copped that ticket and I went. And when I went, I realized why I had to go. And one of the reasons was to create this residency. And so our first residency is coming up in 2 months. We were going to bring 5 writers of the African diaspora out to La Petite Côte, which is beautiful land in Senegal, for them to engage in ancestral technologies and practices, as well as to like create liberated art, period. Mm. And then we have another residency that's happening. It'll be in both Dakar and La Petite Côte, Senegal. That's going to be in January. Applications for that are open until February 23rd of 2023. Application is free and it's really short for writers who are writers of African descent who are interested in going back to our homeland, right? Our Black land to write. And I'm also the founder of Roots Wounds Words, which is a literary arts revolution for BIPOC writers. I just stepped down from being the ED of that. It's been 5 years since I founded it. Mm. I think 5 years is a long time for any one person to lead anything. I think it needs to kind of like, you know, with Marie, like she had to
yes.
like, in order for like her child to grow. I have to dip in order for RWW to grow. And so I'm really excited to see RWW's next, you know, evolution, how it expands and the community that we continue to bring into it as it stands now. We have over 2,000 writers of color in our community who participate in all of our offerings, ranging from writing workshops to writing retreats, the masters of craft talks. You know, we've had folks like Kiese Lehman, Roxanne Gay, Jasmine Ward, Daniel Jose Older, Nisi Shaw just came through for one of our retreats. You know, so definitely Black women in horror, but also Black women at large and writers of color at large showing love and serving as faculty to our storytellers. So those are all the things that I'm doing. I have some other things that are up my sleeve that I'm keeping pretty close to the heart that I can't disclose right now. But my life is all about storytelling and being in my power. And I encourage anyone listening, like, step into your power. Don't be afraid. Don't give a fuck about who told you not to and who said you couldn't. No. Matter of fact, don't even tell people what you're doing. Just do it. And when it's ready to be put into the world, that's a complete, you know me, that's how I operate. When it's ready to be in the world, it's just, here it is. I'm not talking about what I'm going to do. I'm talking about what I already did.
Yeah.
Thank you for tuning in to our Flash Fiction Fridays. Support spooky Black chicks with a tax-deductible contribution through the link in the bio, or by leaving a rate and review. Tune in Friday, March 3rd, for our next story episode, Omali, by Ibele Mogo. Till next time.